Good evening.
Good evening.
Good rainy evening. There's just so much in the heaven that we can take advantage of as we have our service tonight. I've been reading the responses of the full self-emergence people to the paper that was in FSC this week, Radiant Thinking and Feeling, and also feeling the continual surge of primal spirituality too, and knowing we've gone from taking action and fulfilling mission and now in enlightened thinking. I invite us all to be in a space of enlightened thinking, allowing the connection and the openness to heaven to allow our minds to be freed up from the cultures and the ways in which we've been thinking that are habitual. So as Barbara would say, when you say yes, your whole life changes. And so we have a chance to do that tonight. And we're going to hear from Jerry and Gary and Jane and David. And Rude's going to finish with a ritual to prepare us for the arise time. So, Jerry.
Well, thank you, Jane. Great to be with you. And we had a wonderful time in our pre-service meeting. And I'm still, thinking about the wonderful service that we had on Sunday. And as we brought out in the men's meeting here, that service was made possible in some degree by virtue of the tremendous pneumoplasm that had been generated in our primal spirituality class here. I'm sure you all know what I mean by pneumoplasm, when spirit moves into form and a spiritual substance is generated, pneumoplasm. And so we had a beautiful service on Sunday morning. And I've been really thinking about it ever since that time. Our responsibility coming out of that service, very much to me, of being priests and priestesses of the Most High, universal priests and priestesses. And in the words of Swami Beyondananda, the world is suffering from a terrible case, a severe case of truth decay. Truth decay. And the only people who can really deal with this truth decay are priests and priestesses. I mean, we can deal it within ourselves. We can take the drill of love. I hope you'll follow me in this analogy. We can take that drill into our own consciousness and begin to drill out the truth of love, drilling out some of that truth decay. Yeah, I know. No, it's not really painful. It's the easiest thing in the world, really. You want to get rid of that decay. That decay is blocking the truth of love from coming through you. And so you want to get in there with that drill, if you want to put it that way. It's kind of a laser beam of love, and it will eliminate that decay. And it will maybe put in a filling of love, or maybe even a crown of creation, or you may have to do a root canal. I hope no one is going to the dentist in the immediate future. Oh, no.
We'll build a bridge to a new tomorrow.
Okay. I better leave that analogy. But really, that's the only way to deal with the truth decay in the world. I mean, as David particularly was bringing out in our pre-service meeting, we live in a very dysfunctional culture. It's characterized by truth decay on many, many levels. And there's a tendency to to get involved in all of that, to get involved in the human drama. I mean, as much as we are, seeking to bring our own culture here based on the truth of love, we still are surrounded by all of this dysfunctional culture, these other paradigms, and we still find ourselves at times drawn into this. And it takes some real steadiness, some real centering to stay true to who we are in the midst of all of this. That's what I mean by being a true priest and a true priestess of the Most High God, is absolutely maintaining that spiritual centering no matter what is happening around you. And continuing to generate that pneumoplasmic field that will create this new culture. And there are so many ways that the pneumoplasm that we have generated can be dissipated. I mean, if we begin to react to something, if we begin to feel that anger welling up within us and actually begin to express it, we find some of that pneumoplasm being dissipated. I always remember in this connection, when I came here in 1971 to live, and I was in this 4.5-month class, and it was a very concentrated class, and we were doing very deep spiritual work. And right in the middle of the class, I think it was about 2 months in, when I had allowed a lot of pneumoplasm to be generated in me, and the class itself had generated a lot of pneumoplasm, there was this very attractive young woman who came on to Sunrise Ranch. She was just a visitor here, just a guest. And I was kind of hypnotized, you might say, by her beauty, by her attraction. And I invited her to go down to Denver with me right in the middle of the week. I think it was a Wednesday night. We drove down to Denver in my car. We went to several nightclubs, did a lot of drinking and dancing. And we came back about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I got about 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and then I came into class the next morning. I was just kind of dragging in. And John Gray, who was kind of the class leader at that time, said, "Well, Jerry, I can sense that you had quite a night. It's obvious that you blew all your pneumoplasm." And I had to admit that he was right. I could feel that the pneumoplasm had just departed from me. And so here I was, not really taking full responsibility as a class member and allowing that pneumoplasmic field which had been built up in me and also in the class to in some way be dissipated. And when we do that individually in the collective system that we have here on Sunrise Ranch, it tends to dissipate pneumoplasm for the whole community. So how careful I think we need to be in consistently generating the highest within us, constantly generating pneumoplasm, and allowing that universal priesthood to be true in our living. What really are we doing here? And to me, this more than anything else can form a very creative, radiant field for what is coming to us in the way of the Arise Festival. I mean, that's what's going to really do it for Arise. I know there may be, 10 to 12,000 people here, but if we don't have a core of the priesthood here generating that substance, even though there are 12,000 people here, it's going to go haywire. I mean, we could be the dominant factor here, even with 12,000 people, if we are consistently generating that love from our core. So, wow, how important it is to be true to ourselves, and as David brought out on Sunday, to be in the forefront of that marathon. I thought that was a very beautiful analogy. We are running a marathon, and the only way we can be in the front of it is as we are consistently generating that pneumoplasm. That's what puts us in the front. Otherwise, we're going to be back there dissipating a lot of pneumoplasm and fading out of the field. And wow, what do we have to bring? So that's what I would bring. Don't be afraid of going to that spiritual dentist and allowing that truth decay to be eliminated from your consciousness, so that we can really bring something fine to the Sunrise Ranch Arise Festival, and to, in a sense, form a, you might say, a whole culture of the kingdom here, forming a whole new culture, not leaning over to the progressive left or to the right-wing right, but bringing a new culture which can't be defined in political terms or any other terms except in the spiritual terms that we're familiar with. So will you be with me in that, bringing that new culture?
Yes.
All right, let's do it, folks.
Thanks, Jerry. So think about that. That's interesting. I mean, it's a funny thing to say, blow your pneumoplasm, you know, but there's something to that, isn't there? A building of a substance and then just letting it go, where it's like a cake that's rising and then just falls onto itself and no longer has that fullness inside of it. So I was thinking about pneumoplasm and how that is perhaps built or released and let go of. And what was coming into my mind around that is kind of a two-part process of what I'm taking in and what I'm putting out. Like what I'm putting my attention to on, what reality I'm choosing to live in or recognize as true, real, having power and effect and influence, because there's lots of different realities available, and what I'm expressing. There was talking a little bit of before in our prep time around the fact that there's lots of energies all around all the time. There's energies all over in our field. Some of those are less than ideal energies. Some of them are feel good. Some of them feel not so good. And we can feel all of those if we're open to it. So I'm not necessarily like responsible for what's in the field that I'm able to feel, because it's there. It's other people are making up this field. All of humanity is connected to this field. It's all there. If I'm open in my heart and my space of perception, I can feel it. Where the responsibility for me comes in is what I express. I can feel some energies out there, but that's just part of the great soup, this mix of everything that we're in. And if we're perceptive, we can be aware that that's there, but I have a choice of whether or not I want to express that and buy into that. And if I do that, then that's me now, because that's what I'm choosing to know. It's the most beautiful, simple little phrase that I've heard David say so many times as like an emissary truth. You know what you express. So I can have all kinds of different feelings running up in me, but only if I choose to express that does that then become real, and does it then affect my pneumoplasm? the generation of the energy that I'm carrying. Because as I've learned it, and definitely not an expert on the topic, you know, I've read a little bit of Third Sacred School, Divine Design, and stuff like that, but from what I've understood, pneumoplasm is this connecting spiritual substance. And how that substance is built is by dwelling in spirit, by putting my attention on the spiritual realms, on love and light and truth and joy, and by responding to that reality and calling that into my experience, and then choosing to express that through myself as one of all the energies that are available to be felt into and to be expressed. I have choice inside of that. So I remember this Yolanda paper where he says, nobody ever had a good time in a nightclub. Just doesn't happen. It's not a, you go there for a good time, but nobody ever has a good time. Why? If it's just like harmless dancing. I don't know why, but you just, your story says the same thing. I think there's things that we do, there's parts of the culture, things that we do that either can help build up or knock down the amount of pneumoplasm that we get to experience and share inside of our experience with others. I think that alcohol or other substances that have an avoidance tendency kind of just blows our pneumoplasm all to a puddle of pudding. It doesn't have form and substance anymore. But perhaps the more that one spends in meditation, connecting with nature, intentionally expressing love and lifting up within the thoughts and feelings all around, that is a building of that energy, because we're aligned with, existing in, and expressing from the spiritual place within ourselves. And that spiritual place within ourselves is connected to the spiritual place within everything else. It's all just one connected grid. And so much of this is then, I think about emotional mastery and emotional intelligence and understanding and being clear what it is that's, one, I'm putting my attention on and responding to outside or inside myself. And then two, what it is that I'm choosing to express outwardly and how I relate either to myself or to my outside world and the people in it. And as David was saying in our prep time, it's really important to be able to have a sense of centeredness and stability to go through all the storms of the world and our human experience. And we had a pretty good storm today. You know, and there's all kinds of things that fall inside of that category. But if we're not able to be clear and intentional in what I'm giving my response to and what I'm choosing to express into my world, then any little thing can like knock me out of my center, and now I'm not intentional anymore. Now I'm reactive. Now it's not my choice anymore. It's your fault. And then you blew your pneumoplasm because you're not standing in the creator power space. You're not taking responsibility for what it is that's moving out from you and what it is that you're calling into you from the quantum potential field of all that is, because it's all there. But what do we choose to embrace and what do we choose to express has a huge, I believe, factor on what it is that we're generating and sharing with our world. So thank you. Would like to now invite up Jane.
Thank you, Gary. Jerry? Anybody else have a little tooth pain? I'm preparing to go to Edenvale tomorrow. We have a attunement gathering. 25 people are currently planning on joining us. And the theme of it for the summer, this summer retreat time is love in, love out. And I think that there is a discipline and a muscle to be developed with regards to the understanding of what that means. And Jerry and Gary have touched somewhat on it. Our orientation determines what's coming in, and then our orientation also decides what's coming out. Are we paying attention? I really loved the words in your mythic story, Courtney, about there's no greater love. There is this unbelievable source of love that we are not only animated by, but we are a servant to if we are wise. And if we are going to be a servant to it, the idea of being a priest or a priestess has to be in the universal reality. Because love doesn't say, go be this. It says, be me. Be me in the reality of your life. And there were some words, and Karen wrote her response to the paper, these three phrases that help her get centered. I think that one of them was, what would you have me do? What would you have me say? What would you have me think? Were those the three? Where would you have me go? Asking questions to the source of love as opposed to what do I feel like doing, what do I really want, is a whole different orientation and a sense of direction. This great source of love that Courtney spoke about in her mythic story is the animating force of all of us, whether or not we're admitting it and whether or not we're serving it. It's still true. One of the things Barb Duff was, we had a meeting today about what we're going to, the flow of how we're going to do the weekend. And she said, I think it would be really important if we're going to talk about love in, love out, that people go on a walk and let love out to nature as opposed to soaking it up for their own pleasure and nourishment. Like, who is offering back into the world the love that is pouring into them? Or are we constantly looking for sources other than the divine source that is natural to fulfill us and to make us feel happy and like we belong? I know on Friday when we were preparing for service, David was speaking about Beck, first name Don? Don Beck's words about that he spoke at the Evolutionary Leaders Conference. Several of you know him. I don't personally know him. But he was talking about looking at the fact that we live in a society where progressivism is considered God to some people. And there is this thing of comparison and judgment and hierarchy that we've set up in our culture. Like, I'm more spiritual than you. Or I'm more advanced than you. There are ways in which nobody wins in that culture. I'm more feminine than you. I'm more sexy than you. Well, that is true. <There's no. laughs> Only when I put my hand on my hip. Whatever words we use, if we're trying to progress into a culture where we win, we lose. And we are trying to win by using a culture as a measuring stick that is dying. And it is not allowing forms that would give new life, new energy, new possibility, space. I'm starved for the new. I, like Barbara, I am saying yes to the genius that's trying to come through me, knowing full well the genius that has been in me is tired and sorry. Not sorry like apologetic, but it's a sorry state of affairs if I think that it's going to be the source of my happiness, my joy, my creativity. So in some ways, what's happening at this attunement gathering is something David's been speaking about, what's constant and what's coming, what's new. And in looking at the program David did up there in April, it was genius. I mean, it was genius how he got people to a holy place based on the ways in which he knows how to do that. And if we're foolish enough not to acknowledge that something new is coming through him that could be utilized, doesn't mean we have to do the exact same thing, but look at the patterns and how they take people where you want them to go. So, you know, I just said to the rest of the people on the committee, I said, why don't we just use that program and then interject on the theme that we're on and on the ways in which we would do it, But let's not mess with something that got people, I don't know if you remember the service, I think it was called The Highest Love, where I spoke, Barb Duff spoke, Carol Robertson spoke, and we were talking about the seven spirits because it was the conclusion of that time. And something magical was happening because of what led up to it. And I think what happened for the people at Edenvale was far more potent because they were in that process. But there, as David and I met yesterday talking about how to make an attunement gathering as powerful as possible, and the realization that if you're stuck on technique and the physical, you ain't going anywhere. If you're not open to the heart experience of what attunement is about, really, you're like, who cares? All right, everybody, let's do attunement. We're done. I mean, if there's not an engagement of the emotional capacity and how it feels to be a human being with the new culture being born through you, you're not the living attunement that you are designed to be. And attunement, while it is an incredible technique, an incredible healing method, an incredible vibrational way of blessing, it is about the coming forth of the angel. And the coming forth of the angel is the birth of the new culture. And the birth of the new culture is what we're designed for, to be a universal priest or priestess that is allowing a culture to be born because we're present on earth. Right? I mean, this is not like, I'm not like some genius about this. This is the way it is. You know, the 7 days of creation didn't end with the first chapter of the Bible. We are continually generating a new culture, a new world, based on being universal priests and priestesses saying, yes, yes, let's name it this. And then let's see if it lives, and let's name it this. Let's see what's happening. And let's not keep destroying things by trying to force our old culture into the forms that are trying to be born. I've done it, and I am going to say you've probably done it, thinking that we would be happier if we took what was old and we loved and tried to jam it into what's being born right now. I am certain that the majority of addictions in the world are all about that. You know, I've got to get more of what made me happy once. There is research that was done back when I was in, wow, it's going on 30 years probably, when I was studying this, when AIDS was an epidemic in the beginning stages, and it was predominantly in the cultures of gay men and drug users. And one of the things they found was it wasn't what they were doing. It wasn't about opening up their veins and having men having sex with each other. It was the addiction to not having enough that made them vulnerable, that they kept trying to get more and more out of a form that wasn't sustaining them. And so it made the research showed that there was something in that culture more so than the act itself, even though there was physical things that made it possible for the virus to live. It was sustained and spread more by culture than it was by action, which I found very interesting because a culture, an addictive culture, which says, give me more, is a death-oriented culture. Give me more of what I think I want because it's already passed away, and if I let go of it, I don't know what I'll have, and I might never be happy again. So give me more. When the new culture is revealing itself, how welcoming are we to it? I have to admit, sometimes I am not very welcoming. No, don't want it, don't want to see what it looks like, I'm afraid, or I like the way it was. But in the centering place of being oriented as a priest or priestess, which is to me the person who holds the holy space, the possibility of the sacred to be known in the human experience, from that place, that current is my lifeblood. It is that which is not just animating me physically, it is what's pouring out of me into my world so my world lives. It's what's causing my world to come to me. It is what is reshaping the space that I once kept as holy. And it will not be holy if I keep it in structured form that will not change, is not living. One of the things that religion has done to us is caused us to believe that holy, sacred space is where nothing is happening, where God is just holding the space so that we don't make any mistakes. No sinning, but no nothing. I love the quote from someone, it's my imaginary beings and your imaginary beings all telling us what to do and creating an imaginary culture where nobody really knows what to do. So they do nothing. Or they do something and then feel guilty. You know, one of the things that happened in the Catholic Church was a lot of sexual abuse happened in the Catholic Church. And you know one of the reasons? Because the rules were priests should not have sex with women. So in the consciousness of what was happening was they just didn't even see the dysfunction in what they were doing because it was not in the list of sins. I know that that might not be something that a conclusion you would have come to, but I've seen it. Where it's like, you know the rules, and then you have all this current moving through you, and instead of finding a way for it to be creative, you just do everything you can that's not breaking the rules. And nobody ever said they shouldn't do that. I mean, it wasn't on the list of criteria. I mean, it sounds awful to say it, but it is what the human mind will do, is it will attempt to create out of a culture to protect a culture that's dead so that it doesn't stir up trouble. Obviously, a lot of trouble got stirred up. So in the holding of sacred space, being the vehicle that allows the clarity and the power of love to move, are we ready to admit that a lot of the things we're doing have no life in them? Are we ready to admit we want more life? I only get a few nods on. Does anybody else want more life? And are we ready to say, we're willing to see how that wants to be born through me now? Heck, I changed my spaghetti sauce recipe, and that's a big cultural change. I've been making spaghetti sauce for 53 years, and I changed it. I let life move. I mean, it's a funny example, but I gave someone my recipe, and when I went to their house, there was something about their sauce I liked a little bit better than mine. And I found out what they did differently, and that's what I do now. Don't worry, it's still really good. I believe there was a famous book written called The Birth of a Nation. I'm interested in the birth of the new nation. The new nation where the government is from heaven, from the source of love that I said yes to when I decided to come, and I still say yes to now. To let all the cells of my body come into life fully, to let life move through them and invite life into them and let life out of them. David.
Thank you, Jane, Gary, and Jerry. One of the things we're thinking about together tonight is how we here at Sunrise Ranch hold a space into which people come. And with people comes the culture that they bring. And that culture is out of the culture at large. And we're in the position of holding a space for those people to come into, and also of bringing our energy into the field that they're sharing. And people report that that can be lovely. They love coming into the space of Sunrise Ranch that we've created in harmony with this valley and all the living things of this valley. And they love the energy that's ringing in the air in this valley that comes from this community. That is work, you might say, to do. And depending on who the people are and the culture that they're bringing here, sometimes it's more work than others. You probably noticed that. We had a group here recently, Tribalize. And it was work. And in some ways, it was like a gut punch to the community, quite honestly. I received reports, last one just yesterday, a whole long list of things that happened during that time that were just hard. And, of course, we have Arise coming next week. Now, we've gotten into a bit of a groove swing with Arise, and there's a resonance with them that's really energizing, I think, for many of us. And still, there's an art to holding out your arms and holding an event like that, in this case, something like 12,000 people, and not being knocked off your center. And it can be lovely to have the kind of communion with such a group of people that is possible as it is in the Arise event and many other events too. But nonetheless, in the culture of what comes, there are often those things that would tend to be our undoing if we just opened up to them and let them overwhelm us. So whatever it is, we're called upon to do what we're really always called upon to do, which is to be clear about our spiritual centering. And whatever happens, let that be in place. And the more what comes here assails our sense of our own coherence and our own sense of being intact, the more that challenge comes, the stronger our centering becomes. And we're here for whatever's coming. So we thought that given that there are 12,000 people right around the corner coming, it'd be good to talk about such things together. But obviously there are broader implications, and we're covering some of those too. I want to talk a little bit about culture and say that no matter how magnificent a culture is, no matter how ideal, we as a human being thrive when we're centered in spirit, not in the culture. Culture is born, rightly, out of our spiritual centering. There's life in our spiritual centering, as Jane is pointing out. And then, when we're living that life, it naturally configures a culture that is alive among us. But when you go looking for life in a culture, you end up running out of life, is what happens. Even if the culture is ideal, because you can't suck out of that culture to sustain yourself. You can have a very pleasurable interaction with culture, and that can be wonderful. But if you're relying on it for the source of your own life, your own sustenance vibrationally, spiritually, it doesn't work. There is a place where our life originates in us. And if we go there, it's a never-ending flow, always available, and there's always something new and fresh to come into experience. We have to acknowledge that when we look around in the culture that we live in here in America, there is so much of it that is showing signs of decay. And I promise I won't go to the dental analogy here. But there's so much in it that is showing signs of decay, that is past its sell-by date. And there are things about all of it that are wonderful, wonderful building blocks of the new, but of itself aren't the new. Does anybody think that the old patriarchal culture is something we ought to be trying to replicate here at Sunrise Ranch and around the world? That the old industrial civilization and industrial society, social organization is what we ought to be replicating? And then we can go on to models of progressivism. Do we really think that progressivism, as it's been known in our culture, is the answer? somebody associated with Tribalize, who I believe was expressing a progressive attitude, said, you know, Sunrise Ranch isn't really the regenerative community that you think you are. You're really not implementing the leading edge models and paradigms of governance. You know, and, you know, there are much more elevated paradigms of governance that you really ought to be practicing. So, being a little bit of a smart aleck myself, I will admit, I wrote to them and I said, "Oh, well, that's really interesting." I said, "Please tell me about some other multi-generational communities of our size and longevity that have a more advanced paradigm of governance so that we can go learn from them." I got an email back. It's like, I really don't know of any that are. Now, I'm not claiming that we are the epitome in terms of systems of governance here at all. I think we have miles to go, and I hope we go those miles. But I would say that's a progressive attitude. There's some kind of progressive concept about how we all ought to be together. Never mind the fact that it doesn't work, and that is the reason it's not being practiced anywhere, because that model in that person's head that they are criticizing us for not practicing is dysfunctional. When you look at the political world, I think that is one cause of the, what would we call it, of the craziness that is Trumpism. Trumpism, I believe, is at least in part, and particularly not so much Trump himself, because, you know, I'm sorry, I have to zip up my mouth here. But because, you know, you can have a person of a given character in every generation. So those people come along. But really what I'm talking about is the fact that he was elected and is supported. So how did that happen? And some of it is because there are Americans who are looking at a progressive agenda and saying, this ain't working. It's not working for me. And it's not working for America. We need something else. Maybe we should revert back to some old patriarchal model. Well, it's kind of a corrupted, broken, degenerated model of patriarchal society. It's not patriarchal society ever had a best. This isn't it. Anyway, my point is that the answer isn't in any of the cultural paradigms, and that we're here to create new paradigms of how we are being together and how we're functioning. That would be true for me, no matter where I was on the planet, but here you and I have this golden opportunity to be together in this alive, regenerative way and discover new models of being together, new paradigms of being together. So I know I'm running out of time here, but I want to share with you some models of how we're functioning together, and even models of leadership and governance to kind of give you the idea of what I mean. So one, there's the old hierarchical model. Imagine the old hierarchy on the org chart. You know, the spiritual director up at the top and the, well, I guess in this case, the operations director under him, and then the directors and all the departments and the managers under that and all that. That is a way of looking at things. And we're not looking to just throw out paradigms. So I'm not interested in just throwing out the paradigm. But you could also ask yourself, how well does that describe what is really happening at Sunrise Ranch? It is, at some level, that there's a certain truth to it, but ultimately, just following that out will never get us to where we want to go. Never. I'll give you another model. Another model is, well, it's the circle and the focus. it's probably been around in emissary circles more than otherwise, maybe some other spiritual circles. So this model is that there's a circle, that we're all in the circle, but there's some kind of center to the circle. And maybe that center is held by the leader. Well, it's a model, and it has both the circle, and then the circle with some kind of center point to it has some kind of applicability. Focus and field is another name for this one. But does it really get us where we want to go? So we're all standing around in the circle looking at each other. I mean, that can be nice for a while, but where are we going with that? It's kind of hard to get any movement. I want to present you with another model. It's not either, this one isn't the ultimate model either, but maybe is something to try on as something that could be applicable, useful, or actually in play already now. Maybe this is what's really happening. Maybe what's really happening is more like a stealth fighter. You know what a stealth fighter looks like? Kind of like a bat wing or a boomerang, like this. And yes, it comes to focus at a certain point. So there is some kind of focus to it. And there's and that focus is a leading edge in moving into the atmosphere. But actually, that whole wing is moving forward into the atmosphere. And if the stealth fighter is taking off, it's not just because of that point at the focal point in the middle, but it's because the whole wing is moving into the air and into the headwind, as I've been describing it, on takeoff. And doing that, that whole wing is taking off. Now, that's not a hierarchical system. There's some design to it. Everybody's got a place on the stealth fighter, on the wing. But everybody is moving into the air that's ahead of us. And what is that air? The air is the world in which we live. We're moving into that world. It's coming to us, and we're moving into it. Arise is coming to us, but we are moving into it. Each one of us. And yes, we have to find our right synergy and our right relationship with the other people who are on the wing. But I'm not just looking over this way at the person next to me. It's not all about how me and this other person are relating. I'm where I need to be, and I'm moving into the air in front of me. And in that sense, it's very individual. We each have that same exact job of bringing who we are into the world in which we live. And when we're all doing it together in creative formation, we take off. And we take off together. We're not sitting here squabbling about who's where in the hierarchy. Who cares? I mean, truly, who cares? And we're not all worried about who's at the center of the circle, and if it's me, how is David doing? For better or for worse, you know? It's actually not about me. It's about for you, for me, and then for all of us together. It's about us moving into the world and offering what we have to offer into the world and finding that as we do, we're lifting off. We're elevated into this highly creative experience. And yes, I could do something alone, but we're doing it together and we can take flight together. And ain't that grand? You know, if I was here all by my lonesome at Sunrise Ranch, I couldn't be hosting the Arise Festival. No, we together can do that. It seems to me, I know I have the joy of hosting the Arise Festival. I hope you feel exactly the same way. It's not mine exclusively. It's ours if we're in that formation of extending ourselves into the festival. That's my point. No? Yes?
Okay, thank you all went before me. Okay, so I really appreciate the ones went before me, like Jerry, giving your enlightened thinking about spiritual dentistry. And Gary really teaching us how to create pneumoplasm pudding. I like that one. And pudding. Okay, yeah, pudding. So anyhow, yeah. And Jane, you know, your courageous step off really transforming your spaghetti sauce. Yeah. So anyhow, David set the space for me to do that ritual with you, so I will be your priest for the moment. So now it's really getting tough. It will not be a ritual, it will be a shared meditation. Is that good? But before I go there, you know, David made clear already that we will hold the space for the coming Arise Music Festival. And that's a conscious preparation. And it's not doing outer work, it's doing inner work, since we are also inner work, since we are a vibrational ministry. And some observations came to me, like before big events or before the summer high-level involvement in activities, the tension is rising. A lot is coming to us. And then little things happen. You know, people can get easier irritated. There are little misunderstandings. There is irritation. There is little accidents happen. Now, it will be good to pay attention to that phenomenon to prepare for this coming week of setting up the Rise Festival, where we all are involved in, to prepare that in a good way so that we are in a stable place. As David said, being centered, but also preparing that in some other ways. And I would love to give you some tools for that. What's happening before an event, before it's coming? Not only a lot of work is coming through us, but a whole wave of vibrational energy is coming to us. And an example, I experienced that on a certain moment in the Netherlands. I wake up with anxiety, and I try to scan where it comes from. And I come to the conclusion, it's not me. And half an hour later, a client calls me in big panic. Yeah? So we all receive these waves of energy that comes to us, especially when a big thing is coming to us, which is positive. Yeah? But it's still energy. We receive it consciously or less consciously. And, you know, I would love to bring it in consciousness so that we can, from our leadership, guide that whole process in a good way. Thousands of people are coming. They have expectations. They have an focus. They come with certain feelings. And all these currents are coming to us. And there's a beautiful team, a big team from Arise Festival preparing. And that team is in full coherence with Sunrise Ranch. But still, that whole field of intensity is coming to us. So rising intensity creates often in us a reactive pattern, which sometimes we don't know where it comes from. And it's really good to start to learn to gauge if it's coming from our inner world or from our smaller environment, or is it coming from a bigger field. And then we can take care of it. It will touch our mental, emotional body in any way, consciously or subconsciously. And so what can we do in that field? The first thing is being conscious. And being conscious that what we experience is happening in our inner landscape. We can easily project it to the outside, oh, it's happening out there, or it's here, or it's him fault, as Gary also mentioned. Yeah, that can be confusing or that, but in fact, at the end, it's happening in our inner mental emotional structure, in our inner landscape. When we are conscious of that, we will be aware of shifts in energy, and we can try to scan where it's coming from. And when there's a moment we feel touched, that our red buttons are touched, we can say, the best thing we can say do on that moment is stop. Stop a moment and be silent. And we can ask inside, what is happening? Where is this coming from? And when we are still and listen, in most cases, an answer comes. And when that answer comes, we can take more focused action in the outer world or in the inner world. Another thing is, in that field of rising intensity, is don't take things personally. And then when we discern in that field, we may be able to say, hey, this is coming from there, scanning the intensity that's coming from us, to us. So when we know that, when we use these tools, we can take leadership. We can take ownership of the field, our inner field, and next to that of the bigger field, because we can hold that bigger field, and we do that in the coming meditation. The power of intent, that's spoken about before in services, the power of intent creates, we can create with intention. Lynn McTaggart, a journalist, did the intention experiment in 2007, I think, guided by a lot of scientists, and it was clear that her clients, through her books, many people, several hundreds of thousands, in the same time they did that meditation, and it had an effect, scientific measurable. There was a peace meditation which has a direct effect of the criminal events in Los Angeles. It went more than 20% or even more down. So intention works. And when we work with intention, also to the coming cycle or in every moment in our life, in fact, you know, we can create space for things to happen in a beautiful vibrational field. It is about conscious vibrational preparation in the coming field of the Rise Festival and all these people that are coming and that we are holding in this valley together. So now I would like to invite you in a short meditation. Are you in for that? Yeah. So, yeah, you can keep your eyes open or close your eyes and just use the physical body as a doorway to the inner landscape. And in your own private inner landscape, being in the center of it, and feel all that is moving in that inner landscape, partly as a reflection of what is happening in the outer world, in the outer landscape, in your world. And then we make a place for the preparation of the coming Arise Music Festival. It's like a place in our inner landscape, a chalice in which we receive that coming event. And we can feel all the people coming. We can feel the preparing team from Arise, a big team. We can feel the agreement we are in, as David mentioned. And we can feel all these people coming to this valley. And feeling how the arms of this valley are receiving all these people and all the events. Feeling how the valley holds all these people in that event, and feeling how we as a community, as one collective body, hold this event through our physical work, but also through our intentional container. Then see yourself holding the event through your personal work and through your personal intention for the event, your personal offering. Several groups are preparing with responsibility. And from there, see how universal intelligence love is holding that space too, because this event is meant to be here. And in that moment, we can listen to what it is that wants to manifest this time. What is coming from the heavens into the earth. What is coming from each our individual heaven into the earth. And from there we can joyfully bless, receive and bless what is coming. And from there, holding that big event in the chalice within our own inner landscape, we bring back our conscious to the field, the personal field, our own inner landscape, in which this event is one of the things that is happening. But we are always in the center. Even in the joyful participation, we will do. And coming back and being in our own sacred space, where we create intentionally and hold the outer landscape and the coming events, we can come back feeling our physical body and open our eyes when we are ready. So this is a way we can prepare, and a lot of us, I'm sure, are doing that already in this way. Also, not only through the outer work, but also by inner work, consciously set a space. And we have been doing that very well. Is it the fifth year, David?
Sixth year.
Yeah, so it's the 6 year. So I think it's beautiful, even before the coming event, to acknowledge and celebrate what this community has been doing with the RISE community, and that the vibe has been rising. The events are getting more coherent, and beautiful things happened last year. So we can acknowledge, you know, it's good to do that sometimes, and it will empower what we will do in the coming week, because we have been doing a beautiful job together, which is a blessing for many, many people. And it's the message of the rising sun that we give to the world. So let's celebrate that. Thank you all. It's 10 minutes later, but have a beautiful evening.